Devi Gajai, some of
Tam
Him.
Yajna Pashavaha.
The sacrificial animals.
Anena.
By him.
Sangyaptaha.
Killed.
Yay.
All of them who?
Udayahuna.
By the most unkind.
Kutarahai.
By axes.
Chichiduhu.
Pierced to pieces.
Krudaha.
Being very angry.
Smarantaha.
Remembering.
Amivam.
Sinful activity.
Asya.
Of him.
Tat.
That. Translation. That most unkind king, Puranjana, had killed many animals in various sacrifices. Now, taking advantage of this opportunity, all these animals began to pierce him with their horns. It was as though he were being cut to pieces by axes. So you can repeat, that most unkind king, Puranjana,
had killed many animals in various sacrifices.
Now, taking advantage of this opportunity,
all these animals
began to pierce him
with their horns.
It was as though
he were being cut to pieces by axes.
So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Those who were very enthusiastic about killing animals in the name of religion or for food must await similar punishment after death. The word mangsa, meat, indicates that those animals whom we kill will be given an opportunity to kill us. Although in actuality no living entity is killed, the pains of being pierced by the horns of animals will be experienced after death. Not knowing this, rascals unhesitatingly go on killing poor animals. So-called human civilization has opened many slaughterhouses for animals in the name of religion or food. Those who are a little religious kill animals in temples, mosques, or synagogues. And those who are more fallen maintain various slaughterhouses. Just as in civilized human society, the law is a life for a life, no living entity can encroach upon another living entity as far as the Supreme Lord is concerned. Everyone should be given freedom to live at the cost of the Supreme Father, and animal killing, either for religion or for food, is always condemned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, text 19, Lord Krishna says, Thanaham dushata kruran sangsareshu naradaman shippam jashram ashuban asarishveva yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous were the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. The animal killers, dvishataha, envying other living entities in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are placed in darkness and cannot understand the theme and objective of life. This is further explained in the following verses. So, tang gignya pachavo nena sam yapta ye dayaluna kutaras chit chitu hruda smarantum hivam ashatat. So, om gana timidam dasha ganam jana shalakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So the first thing that comes into mind after reading this is the story of Magrari, the hunter. I think you all know that story. Magrari the hunter, he was actually given some special mercy because he was given information, not only information, but he was given a preview of what would happen to him. Does everyone know the story of Megrari the Hunter? No, some of you don't. Okay, so we'll tell it. So Megrari the Hunter, he was trained up very nicely in America. Just like I just read that, what is it that, oh yeah, this December more guns have been sold than any other time in the history of the United States. Gun shops are just like, they're in ecstasy because they're making a lot of money. And so anyway, so he was trained up, not with guns, of course, but he was trained up by his parents. People talk about family tradition. So his family tradition was basically to half kill the animals, not even fully kill them, because they'd like to see the animals squirm. And we see that in America, too. You know, you like to see animals suffer. I mean, they throw lobsters into boiling water in the restaurants, right? Or they have these chicken fights, you know, called cockfighting, actually, not chicken fighting. Chicken fighting is something different. You do in the water with devotees. Anyway, so they have these, or dog fights. In so many ways, they're hurting the animals. Or yesterday I was reading, what was this, National Geographic, how in our blessed western plains, like in the Montana and everything like that, the rodeo is very popular. You heard of rodeo? The rodeo. You probably have in the Dakotas, too, because they have nothing else to do with life. That they are very expert with these lassos and, you know, taming the wild ponies and wrestling down steer. The steer is a fancy name for a male cow, a bull. So anyway, so there, so even in America we have this like, and also, oh yeah, I was reading nothing about Mexico. That in Mexico they had bullfighting, and Spain too. No, actually it was Spain, and they had these. They just make a whole ritual about it, too, that they have, I was looking at the picture, they have these decorated horses with flowers all over them to pull the carcass of the bull out of the arena after the bull is killed by the matador. Matador means the person who kills, basically, isn't it? Matador. Just like if you go into a, I'm not sure if it's the Mexican Spanish, but if you go into a butcher's shop, it's called Los Matadores de los Teques or something like that, right? In Venezuela, it's like that. The killers of the wherever they're located. So, and then even in the bullfighting, they have these thing called picadores. And these people even torture the animals more. You know, so they have these picks. They pick, you know, just to make the bull angry. They actually stick these. Has anyone here seen that? You've seen that. They stick these long. What? Banderillas. Yeah. But I actually, one time I went to a bullfight. Before I was a devotee, I was like 16 years old. You know, it was in Tijuana. So, anyway, it wasn't my fault. Don't blame me. So these picadors, they stick the picks into the bull. It was actually big, long sticks, and they hang off out of the bull, and the bull gets angry. So in other words, well, the point I'm making is not to be too gross about this discussion, is that even in America, you know, in God bless America, or in Mexico, or in so-called Western civilized countries, we take pleasure in seeing animals suffer. There's some ecstasy. And in Spain, they have this thing called the bull run, where the bulls run through the street. Many people are killed from time to time in the bull run. You've heard of this? Anyone's heard of this before? You heard about it. So we're in a, you know, we can look down at Megrari and say, oh, that was Megrari. The point I'm making is that, you know, we look down and say, oh, Megrari, he was just a cruel hunter. But, huh? We got the same thing happening in America. Or, you know, even if we take pleasure in killing a cockroach or a spider, there's no difference. You know, or a little kid pulls a leg out of an insect. You know, there's no difference. It's the same cruelty. That cruelty is defined sometimes as the failure of imagination. Of course, there's a spiritual reason, but the failure to be able to imagine that if I was in that particular person's situation or a particular animal's situation, of course, by so-called modern theology, animals have no souls. You understand that? Like if you argue with people of a particular religion, we won't mention the religion, they'll say animals have no souls. But let's say admitting that animals and living entities have souls, compassion comes when you can put yourself in the other person's or the other entity's situation and then see how they would feel, how you would feel being in that situation. And you deal not only with animals, you deal with everybody like that. I mean, that's really a devotee. You know, he deals with everyone as, you know, putting himself, that's empathy, basically, putting himself in that person's situation. How would I like to be dealt with? And you don't really see this in personal interactions. You know, I hardly see it in any personal interactions where people put themselves, you know, when they're dealing with me in my situation, or other people put themselves in the other person's position and say, you know, how would I feel? I mean, that's really where it comes from, where compassion really comes from, where you can just say, you know, what if I was that bull? How would I feel with people sticking things in my back? Or if I was that cockroach and these giant people were spraying Raid on me, you know, someone was chasing after me with some poison. So, anyway, enough of that. So, let's get back to Magrari. So we shouldn't think that Magrari is someone who is especially cruel. He's really typical. He's typical, and even, you know, we have a little bit of Magrari consciousness in our own mind, too, our own heart. So Magrari was, in his family tradition, you know, he was half-killing animals. And because he was half-killing animals, he liked to see them suffer. And so what happened is that Narada Muni came along, and he saw these half-killed animals and started to free some of them. You know, he opened up the traps. You know, they have these bear traps. It was something like that. In a more ancient context. So he opened them up, and then Magrari said, you know, why have you let my animals go? And Narada Muni said, you know, why you have killing them? You know, why don't you just kill them completely? You know, just at least they're not going to suffer as much. And Magrari said, it's my family tradition. And people use that excuse all the time. This cultural thing, the tradition. We become so much, let us say, addicted to different traditions that we were born in, that we even project those traditions onto our performance of bhakti yoga. I mean, we were just discussing this on the internet, and there was a GBC conference that in some of the temples they actually dressed Krishna is like Santa Claus, without a beard, of course, and Radharani is Mrs. Santa Claus. You know, like a full outfit. And so, you know, just because they're addicted to this tradition without thinking, and they without thinking why. I mean, it's all right to put red outfit with a little fur on it, not real fur. Krishna's not a kshatriya in Vrindavan. You know, he doesn't wear animal fur. So it's all right to do that, you know, red outfit and everything like that. You know, you want to keep in with the times. But then to actually adapt the Malecha culture to deity worship, you know, to project your Malecha culture on the transcendental environment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's not so good. I mean, I was thinking a little humorously, that, you know, why don't we just, like, during the month of Ramadan, dress Krishna up as a desert dweller, as a camel caravan. You understand? Camel caravan. And then during the Jewish holidays, we can dress him up as Moses or something. And, you know, it gets ridiculous. But some of the temples were actually doing that, you know, dressing Krishna basically is Santa Claus. And anyway, So we have to be able to understand transcendental principles. I mean, of course, we do things according to our culture, too. I mean, that's a fact. Or many things we do are culturally bound. It's interesting, there was a comment made, too, that even the style that we dress the deities in is more a Mughal style, but, you know, which is interesting, than it is Vrindavan style. You know, if you look at the style of clothes and everything, a lot of the things in India, like, are influenced by the Mughal culture, like a lot of the styles, a lot of the architecture in India is influenced like that. You know, sometimes people talk about Vedic architecture and they present different examples of different buildings. Well, those are mostly Mughal in North India, which is really interesting, you know. Anyway, so getting back to the point, we're interested in eternal religious principles, not simply cultural things, and we're not projecting our own culture, and especially Malecha culture, upon the realm of the absolute. You know, we definitely don't want to do that. So this particular Magrari, he had his cultural training, and that's the reason. Actually, that's the reason a lot of people give for not giving up meat. You know, it's what we've always done. You know, and our parents taught us that way, and our grandparents did that. This is our culture. I mean, I was looking at that. You know, the Montana farms and the National Geographic, and there's this whole culture. You know, you go to the 4-H club. You know what a 4-H club is? Nobody knows what a 4-H club is. 4-H is like for the young people. It's like the up-and-coming cowboys, up-and-coming farmers, basically, in America. For young people, it's a 4-H thing. So, you know, you go to this. So people are so much culturally bound. They can't really break out of their boxes. I mean, that's another important thing in preaching Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, we got to break people out of their boxes. I mean, of course, the American culture right now is getting worse. I mean, if they were just simply members of the 4-H club, it would probably be a little pious compared to what's going on, you know, with the breakup of marriages or the minimization of marriage. In other words, you just like shack up and then you break up and shack up and break up. I mean, that's what's happening in America. It's pretty sad. And the breakup of the family, the mistreatment of children. Actually, I was in Mississippi and I was speaking to a group of social workers, and I was saying they had worked for 30 years doing social work, and I said, are things worse? And they said, are they worse? You can't imagine, you know, that we're getting kids dropped off. This is Mississippi, of course, not like our pious North Carolina. But we're getting kids dropped off practically every day. You know, we have to learn how to change diapers in the social work department because we can't keep up with the mistreatment of kids and the kids getting, you know, parents just coming and dropping the kids off on the doorstep. You know, sometimes you hear about that in the old days, how in the church you'd find a little basket with a kid outside the basket, but nowadays it's just getting worse. Anyway, so it's a real challenge because people basically are so attached to their particular culture that how do you present Krishna consciousness? Of course, first you have to present Krishna consciousness in terms of their culture, but then gradually you have to ease them into some transcendental understanding that's transcultural. Okay. So, I got that out of the way. So as far as Magrari, Narada Muni said to him, basically, don't you understand you're going to have to suffer for all this, what you're doing? And Narada Muni showed him a coming attraction. This is similar to what's happening here, that Paranjana didn't have a coming attraction. It was the real thing. He wasn't so fortunate. But Narada Muni was, being a preacher of the Lord, he's actually very more merciful than the Lord himself. And so he thought, I want to save this person before he has to endure the suffering that's mentioned here with being pierced with the horns of the animals or tortured or killed by the animals, because that's actually what happens. That's the law of karma. There's a reason for the law of karma. It teaches, ultimately, it teaches you compassion. You may say, how does it teach you compassion? Because you're put in the other person's situation. There's a reason for it. It's not just punishment for the sake of punishment. You know, so that, you know, that God will feel good that you're suffering. You know, there's this depiction sometimes in different religions how when you don't do something properly, you go to hell, and then God is just saying, you didn't make it, baby, in this lifetime. And so that's it. You just had one time, ha-ha, stay in hell. Not only go to hell, but stay in hell. So there's this depiction of God being vengeful. And also, you know, some of the religious literatures, he's even depicted as being jealous. He's a jealous God. But actually, you know, Krishna's not jealous for the same reason we're jealous. Because, you know, he needs us. Krishna's jealous for our benefit. You know, he knows it's the best thing for us. So the purpose of the punishment is to put us in the other situation. That's why we get put in an animal situation, or you get put in the womb of a lady and you get aborted if you were an abortionist, because you get to experience it from that perspective. You couldn't use your imagination or, you know, see through Shastra, so therefore you have to do it. And I didn't even experience in this life when I deal with someone, let's say, not considering them empathically, Krishna puts me in that same situation so I can see and experience what it was like. You know, if I'm too harsh with someone, or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever, judgmental or something like that, without hearing or understanding the other person, then I get put in that situation. I said, hey, yeah, that was what I did. You know, I understand that. Krishna does that. I mean, that's an interesting teaching technique. It's called role-playing or switching roles. But in real life, it's pretty traumatic. It's better to do it, you know, with your subtle body, understanding someone's situation. Say, hey, if I was that person, how would I want to be dealt with? You understand? That's compassion. That's empathy. That's how you develop empathy. So Krishna puts the living entities in these different bodies so they can experience cruelty from the perspective of the entity that's being abused. I mean, this is, and after a few experiences of that, then you come to the conclusion, you know, from many experiences of that, then you come to the conclusion, you know, it's better to be seeing all living entities equally. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanapashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato navigigupshate. So, Magrari had this coming attraction by the mercy of Narada Muni. In the same way, we have actually been given by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada this knowledge, which is sort of a coming attraction. The knowledge of what would have happened to us had we not taken up Krishna consciousness. I mean, these are all descriptions of what would have happened. And so, that inspires us to be compassionate, to treat other living entities equally. Not just the point of not killing living entities, but just in all of our interactions with human beings, with animals, with any sentient being, or even with a plant. You know, plants are not as sentient. In other words, they're not as perceptive and their nervous system is not developed. But basically, you know, at one point in the past, we were plants. You were spinach. Or cactus. You know, you were spinach, you were cactus, you know, all these things. You know, we've gone through these 8,400,000 species of life. So how would you feel if you were that spinach? At least you should be offered to Krishna and benefit in that way. So anyway, so this is really what's happening. This understanding of as you sow, you shall reap is something that transcends religions, different sectarian religions. And this is something, if really someone wants to be religious or spiritual, use a different word, they have to understand that point. That's That's like foundational to spiritual life. And of course, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, text 4, it says that one who is killing or harming other living entities or treating cruelly other living entities, they can never be attracted or understand the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of God. It's a famous verse. Pashugnats is the statement. Those who are killers of the animals. Vrittatar sarubhigiyamanat pavosharat shotra pano vinamat. Kautama shloka gunanavadat puman virajeta bana pashugnats. And it's such an important verse, and Prabhupada would quote it often. He said, those who are, it says, Nivritta Tarshat, start from the beginning, that all of us are experiencing the miseries of the material world, and those miseries can be mitigated, that is, eliminated, by hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes. Nivritta Tarshat, Ubhagiyamanat. And the remedy, Bhavo Shado, the remedy, Shrotra, Manobiramat, which will make you happy. You know, people ask, you know, how can I become happy? How can I become aloof from this material world? How can I become detached from all these things? Just hear and chant about Krishna. I mean, it's such an easy remedy. You know, it's not like, you know, taking some chemical or radiation therapy or chemotherapy that causes your hair to fall out. It's very easy. It just, it pleases the mind, it pleases the heart. And those transcendental verses, Kautama Shloka, which are filled with gunanavada, with the quality, descriptions of the qualities of the Lord, can be appreciated and give relief to the material miseries to everyone except for Puman Virajeta Vanaposhugnat, for those who are actually harmful to other living entities. I'm paraphrasing that. It basically says killers of the animal. Those who are killers of animals. So it's extremely important to teach people that principle. Not just animals, as I mentioned before, but every living entity. Dealing with them as if you were in that position. Like that. And how could you go and do bullfighting if you were thinking like that? The bullfighter will become the bull. And you're going to be stuck with all those picks. All right. So, with that in mind, the doors keep, the walls keep moving. Anyway. Like Prabhupada said, slamming doors crack the heart. So, that's Prabhupada's statement. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
2 years ago, I was sitting over here reading
Yeah.
It struck me that the level of compassion was very deep. It was not displaced. There were normally displaced hours. Here are the animals suffering. So we can identify with the suffering, but the question of the question was voiced, who has caused the suffering? And then the compassion was focused on the person who is implicated in the suffering.
Yeah.
To relieve further suffering, you know, because this person was going to suffer, be crazy with all the animals that are suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
For us, we think, or other groups in the world, thinking, let's relieve the suffering of the animals and close, you know, trying to relieve that suffering. But actually, the cause of the suffering is this ignorance.
Yeah.
That people are accepting that. And us, we focus our compassion on people's misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're putting a band-aid on a sliced vein.
You're right. No, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Actually, that was Rupa Goswami's analysis, too, that the cause of suffering is ignorance. It's very interesting. That's a Nectar devotion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So the idea is to alleviate the ignorance, because that's the cause of suffering. That's the cause of suffering, because, yeah, you're right, if you just like join the animal rights movement, you know, the PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, and I have some friends in that movement. Actually, they like me because I'm a vegan. But so it doesn't really end the suffering because you're not ending the ignorance, and the suffering will continue. And really, and ultimately, you know, to relieve people of suffering, we have to give them Krishna consciousness. So Narada Muni didn't simply have the hunters stop hunting. He had them chant Hare Krishna in front of a tulsi plant. And the hunter became such a great, we have to finish the story, of course. Hunter became such a great devotee that later on he wouldn't even step on an ant when Narada Muni and Parvati Muni came. You know, so that real compassion comes from Krishna consciousness. Otherwise it's partial. You know, you'd be compassionate or loving towards one living entity and not towards another living entity. But if you're Krishna conscious, you know, real Krishna consciousness, you're going to be loving towards all living entities, not hateful towards any living entity. So you're right, the ignorance has to be addressed. It's not simply, you know, not simply be kind, being kind to everybody in a material sense. Yeah. Madhava.
You were talking briefly about promiscuity in society, in America, and so on. So I'm always reminded of one thing I heard one time in a lecture, one time about, was talking about the knot in the heart, that in materialistic society, Carlos Montague, could be entangled and knotted in the heart. And he was talking about present culture, and he said, and the old promiscuity. And he said, somehow the knot is becoming slackened and broken. And he said, that is good. He said, he was giving some positive perspective that from, I guess, a preaching perspective or ultimately from a preaching perspective that it's going to be favorable. People are going to become less attached to and less bound up.
I think Prabhupada was referring to family attachment at that point, more than anything else. You know, like you see in certain cultures, that the family attachment is so strong that you just continue doing what your parents are doing because that's the culture. You know, you don't want to deviate. You know, one thing is in America, Prabhupada was able to get the Americans because they had no family attachment. They, you know, they could easily say to their parents, I'm joining the Hare Krishna movement. And their parents could just tear their hair out and it wouldn't have made a difference. But in India, it's in certain places, it's not like that. I mean, like in certain places, like in Gujarat, we don't make brahmacharis in Gujarat. The reason is the families won't let their children. You know, we make devotees, you know, it's interesting. You make adults, you know, some of the older Gujarati men, women, families, they're all devotees, very nice devotees, but their children, no. They're devotees, but at home, they won't let them become brahmacharis in the temple. Practically all the pujaris all come from other places in India, in Baroda and Ahmedabad and other places, because the family attachment is so strong. I'm not saying that's bad, I'm not saying that's good. All I'm saying is that's something that really would have impeded Prabhupada in getting brahmacharis and people that just like surrender everything and leave their family. So, I mean, so like you're saying, pointing out there is a plus side to that. Although, just want to end that with illicit sex life, it actually indicates great hard-heartedness because one is not loyal to the other person, and therefore that causes extreme pain in the other person's heart. You understand? You know, it's not a victimless thing. When people are married and someone has an illicit relationship with someone else, it causes so much pain. You're not thinking of the other person. So it's actually very uncompassionate activity. So.
All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.